From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. Hey, everybody. I'm your host, Nate Russell. Welcome to another brand new episode of this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, as always. Guys, I hope that you've had a chance so far to check out our new content. We're really excited about it, not least of which because I'm feeling great that I'm no longer stretching the truth and telling you guys that new content is coming out on UCB Comedy. It actually is. We've had three of our six videos in our new series, hashtag Target Demo, which we previewed in our last episode of this show, have come out on Facebook and YouTube. Check it out. And then there's more content coming out the rest of the month. Really excited to present that stuff to you. Hope you've been enjoying it. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, that's the beauty of digital, guys. It's available 24 hours a day, and it's all free. So the price is right. It only costs your time. So hopefully you get a chance to check that out. Hey, anybody who's going to be in town in New York City for the Del Close Marathon later this month, please come and check out the UCB Comedy Podcast Lounge, which is going to be a space that we have set up at the party space at DCM. It's a space where you can go hang out as a performer. You get some free beer. You get some free soda. There might be little snacky snacks around as well. Come and check that out. And all afternoon on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to be doing live podcast recordings. A lot of our favorite podcasts from our network, plus some of our friends from other networks who are around the UCB world, doing live recordings 12 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday, including this show. And we hope to see you there at the party space at the Del Close Marathon. Check it out, delclosemarathon.com for all the details and tickets. Before we get to today's episode, just wanted to give you guys a little news bulletin of something that I ran across this week that I thought was kind of interesting. It relates to this show. I'll post out a link on Twitter and Facebook, Twitter at UCB Digital, Facebook UCB Digital Podcast. But if you didn't see this, there's a new film that just premiered this week, June 1st, on Vimeo. It costs $6. And what it is it's the first film filmed entirely via Snapchat. So if anybody has seen this, a lot of people have watched the Snapchat version of this. So it's a film called Sick House, and it was filmed in 10-second snippets posted for available on Snapchat and now has been compiled and is available for purchase at that $6 price on Vimeo On Demand, which is fascinating development in a lot of different ways. One, the storytelling mechanism of using 10-second snippets on social media as a free platform to build the buzz for what is a feature film. Two, the idea of taking something that exists in that just very disposable Snapchat space and then making it into something that exists forever and is available as a feature film. Three, the sort of storytelling mechanism of it. And then four, the idea that this is a film shot entirely on iPhones and entirely in vertical. And I got to say, as somebody who's really dedicated to filmmaking and to the sort of new media space, I'm conflicted about this thing. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to spend $6 on it and watch it and let you know if I feel like it's worth $6, which is, you know, a decent amount of money to spend on a rental. I remember when rentals were like a buck, right? But just $6 for this movie entirely in vertical. It's the vertical part that gets me. I just can't imagine enjoying something for an hour and a half in that aspect ratio. And maybe that, you know, puts an expiration date on me. And maybe this is where the way that the media is heading, although I just really hope not. There's just something about that vertical space that I just can't get over. But we'll give it a shot. We'll check it out. We'll spend $6 on it. If you've seen it and you either want to warn me not to watch it or to watch it, let me know on Twitter. But I'm going to give it a shot. 68 minutes is the length of this movie. I can't believe it's all on Snapchat. And I'll let you know how it goes. But excited to check that out and thought it was appropriate in our space where we're talking about, you know, digital media creation and the sort of convergence of these platforms, which from that regard, I'm happy that this exists. Well, okay. That's it. That's it for that. Let's move on to today's episode. Really excited to present this one to you guys. This is a deep cut as far as stuff that is hopefully applicable to a lot of y'all and is something that it comes from my personal experience as well. This is a panel discussion that we recorded a couple of weeks ago with three of the most talented editors in our UCB Comedy New York community. Tessa Greenberg, who's the head of post here at UCB Comedy, Alex Myers and Chris Knight, who are a couple of longtime digital team guys here in the community. And what all of these folks, myself included, have in common is that we've used editing as a tool to work, right, to eat, but aren't necessarily passionate about being known as an editor and building a career as an editor in the long term. It's about using that skill set and the access that it provides you to creative projects as a building block in your career. And so I wanted to get a couple of people with various points of view, but that same sort of position overall in the same space to talk about the different ways that they tracked getting into editing, how they've used it to further their career, where that approach has worked, where it's come up short. I know that, just to speak for myself, I do not regret a minute of learning the skill set of editing, applying that trade. I do think that I spent a long time in that chair and probably more than I wanted to in terms of like thinking about using it as a transitionary element. But I think as a tool that that teaches you how to be efficient as a writer, as a creative, and as a collaborator, I don't regret a minute of it. I think it's a great path. And if it's a path that you're considering choosing, hopefully this is a podcast that is beneficial to you and your thought process. And even for folks who are editors and who want to be editors long term, hopefully this is valuable to you too, just in terms of another perspective on your work. So without further ado, really excited to present this to you, our editing roundtable with Tessa Greenberg, Alex Myers, and Chris Knight. All right. Well, thanks guys for doing this.
Totally.
Sure.
Yeah, no problem.
So maybe let's go around the room just to start so people can identify voices. You know what I mean? So let's just go around and who are you and sort of like what is your day job right now? I'll start with you, Tessa.
Great. Hi. I'm Tessa Greenberg. I'm the head of post-production here at UCB Comedy. Delightful position, delightful place. And yeah, I've been video editing for 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
Probably more than that, but I don't know when you really start to count. Like, was iMovie in 2002, does that count as like when I started editing? Sure, maybe, why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, professionally for 6-7 years or so. So yeah, that's me.
Cool.
I am Alex Myers. You're welcome. thanks and you're welcome. Yeah, I am a freelance editor. I'm part of a post-production studio and editing pool called Buttermilk Studios. I've mostly been working at MTV Networks the past, like, 3 months, like TV Land and Viacom. I've been editing since, I guess, 2004.
Yeah.
Since I started cutting my own stuff, like my own sketches and stuff. And I've been editing professionally since 2008.
Cool, and I am Chris Knight. I am the lead director editor at a comedy network called Flama, which is owned by Univision.
You guys say Flama, not the Flama.
No, not
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah, and it's weird. Flama. It's like the URL flama.com was taken.
That's weird. I thought it was Flama.
Yeah. You have to say it a little bit sultry.
Flama.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm the lead director editor. I have been editing professionally for 8 or so years.
Yeah.
And also directing and producing and kind of everything.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think that, you know, the reason why I wanted to sort of get you guys in a room is because I think that we've all used editing as a professional tool, but it's not necessarily where any of you guys, and I'd put myself in that group too, wanted to wind up, but using it as a professional exercise to further your network of contacts or work experience to sort of like build yourself up as a filmmaker and then find ways to sort of like maybe transition out of it. So a tool towards other professional opportunities. So I guess like for me, I'll speak to my own experience. Like for me, when I graduated, like I went to film school and it was the kind of environment where I left film school and I felt like I had some contacts, but like not really, you know, and everybody's working at that same level and just trying to like hustle. And just quickly found myself in a position where I'm like, I need to take whatever I can get, you know? wound up like freelance PAing for like sports stuff. And then that turned into some sort of like graphics producing, like a live TV environment. And it was super corporate and super like, it was relatively high end, but it was also like a little bit, it felt very like particular direction and not necessarily a direction I wanted to commit to. And then found myself at like, joining my first cult, which was a place called DCTV, which is still an independent media center in Lower Manhattan.
Your first cult.
My first cult.
Baby's first
cult. Before I found this cult, it was that cult, which was very much like about empowering documentary filmmakers to tell their own stories and being a low budget resource center for documentary filmmakers. And then like getting into a job there and then sort of like coming out of the back end of that being like, I want to do more creative work, you know?
Yeah.
And editing seemed like the way to get paid fastest. Mm-hmm. On the type of stuff that was that people were calling about from contacts from school, from contacts from wherever, like the stuff that was like, you can get paid right now.
Yeah, it's weird how you get tons of people to PA for free.
Yeah.
You really don't get people to edit for free.
Uh-uh. No, not at all.
No.
It's such a time suck. It's like, the number one thing.
And a learned skill. Very specific, yeah.
But, I mean, just any sort of editing job is not a quick couple of hours.
Yeah.
You know, at least when they're asking you to do it. If it was a couple hours, they'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it is very quickly that way to just get money in your pocket.
Is that sort of how you guys wound up in it, too?
This is Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
Lama.
You. And you're welcome. I started off as a PA at Spike. I was studying, I went to school to be with the intention of being a writer, but then I didn't pay attention to what classes I was taking. So I ended up, I went to a liberal arts college and there's no major except liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up taking most classes in philosophy because I liked it. And so then I needed to do an internship, and because I went to a weird bullshit school. It's the new school. I liked it, but it is, you know, liberal arts schools are like kind of bullshit. So I did an internship at Spike TV where my brother works, partially out of laziness. Second, also partially out of I thought it would be weird and interesting to be at a network that, at least at the time, was like the men's network, and I wanted to see from the inside how something so corporate worked. And by accident, damned myself existentially to this career. I bamboozled myself into this career. I really wanted to be a writer, and I started to do writing there for promos. Like, I didn't know how TV worked. I was like, I'm working for Spike. I guess I'll write for TV now. It's like, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
What it means to work for Spike and write means to write promos. And so very quickly I learned, one, that if you want to write, you need to take notes. And I hated that. I just fucking hated it. I hated not being, like, the whole point of writing for me is absolute just doing whatever you want, you know? And I learned quickly that I was able to take notes on editing, but not on writing.
Hmm.
And I already knew how to edit. And so I, as my internship turned into a PA job, I just slowly started doing less and less writing and started to do more editing. And I was good at it and would basically do the notes that people gave me.
Yeah.
And so, and so people want, and want, and also by virtue of a, like, even though I sort of didn't like my job in a way, I also liked the people I worked with. And so I did a good job anyway. And people want to work with someone who does a good job, like tries their best.
They want to work with an Alex Myers.
Yeah. They heard my name and they were attracted to me.
Alex Myers.
They saw what I looked like and they wanted in.
You have the perfect combination of syllables that just scream sex appeal.
Alex Myers.
I'm great. I'm just great. I'm just great and people love it.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
What about
for
you, Tessa?
How'd
you wind up in it?
So I went to theater school.
Yeah.
I went to Marymount Manhattan College and I graduated in 2007. But even while I was there, 2 years in, I realized pretty quickly that I did not want to pursue a career as a theatrical performer. It seemed like hell to go to these cattle call auditions. And I think I learned very quickly, like, oh, what I like about performance is not trying to fit myself into a role that somebody else wrote. It's making my own shit. So I had gotten a DV camera for my birthday, and I had tons and tons of those little mini DV tapes, and I would just bring my camera everywhere in college. And then I would go home and fuck around on iMovie for hours. Like, I wouldn't go to my friend's party sometimes just because I would be, like, messing around with editing. And then, or bring my camera to my friend's party, and then I'd go edit some, like, weird, you know, like, basically video art.
Yeah.
When I look at it now, it's so weird. I'm like, this shit should be in the motherfucker Whitney. It's so weird. not really. It's not that good. But fucking around led to, you know, learning some skills, and I wanted to learn Final Cut so that I could start writing things and filming them with better cameras.
Yeah.
And I learned Final Cut myself. I had some friends help teach me along the way. And I think my real story is for the first 6 or 7 years of my 20s, I tried as hard as I could to not have a real job. I really wanted to make it as an artist. Yeah. I was in a band for 5 years. We were touring. I directed all of our music videos. I edited all of our music videos. I did everything I could to try and use all the skills that I had learned over the years to try and make it as an artist. And I did have a side job, which was working at a film studio in Bushwick, where I was a studio manager there. Mm-hmm. It was a huge studio. It was 7,000 square feet. It was a 300 like foot wide psych, white psych with like 24 foot ceilings. It was insane. And they were like, yeah, if no one's in here, you can do whatever you want. So I would go and shoot sick music videos for my band, or I thought they were sick. I mean, you can go and find them online. But,
I like that you're willingly putting those out. It's like if anything I made 6 years ago, I'm like, please do not.
Well, that's why I'm like,
stay away.
Okay, at the time I thought they were sick, but if I look at them now, they're very, you know, they're fun. They're super fun.
Yeah.
But long story short, by that time, I had, you know, gained some good skills in, as an editor. And when I was ready to, like, leave that job and try freelancing more as an editor, it was just a skill that, and when I came to UCB, I joke about this, but I started taking classes here because I wanted to do improv. My band broke up, and I was like, I miss performing. I did go to theater school for a reason. I love filmmaking. I love both of these things. Let me just try improv. And now I joke that the way that I came to the UCB Comedy Film Department and the way that I've existed at UCB is that I came in through the back door. Most people that come up through UCB start in a 101 improv class, and then they show their worth and their talent, and then they maybe make it onto a Lloyd or a Herald team. And I joke that I knew how to edit. I got an internship at UCB Comedy. I worked for free for a few months. I was already 28 years old at the time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be here, and I wanted to be editing and filmmaking, and I wanted to do comedy. And I joke that I snuck in, but I guess I like to think that all those back years of fucking around and trying to be an artist actually ended up with what we're all talking about is like this actual marketable skill that is learned just by hours and hours of like sitting down and like fucking around and making weird shit and making mistakes and then one day finally being able to get paid something for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the dream.
You can dig it. What about you, Chris?
So I actually, I knew really early on I was going to edit very early. Like I was editing in high school, and my high school had like a TV department where we'd do like a weekly show that like all the classrooms had to turn on like Thursdays or whatever. And it was like the announcements, something boring, but you get to film your own segments in between. And even in high school, I was like, oh, okay, so this is my thing now. I'm going to do this. And so I'd shoot and edit my own segments in there. My first thing I ever edited on, I don't even remember the name anymore, but I always called it a church box because it was like a machine that was just dedicated to single track DV editing that like churches use to put their gospels together and stuff. It was incredibly primitive. I edited on that. I edited on VHS. I did like actual, you know, tape to tape editing, and I just really fell in love with it. So I went to college knowing that I would train to edit because I could make money. Like very early on, I was like, oh, this is the way they make money. And then I really want to direct, but that's a pipe dream. Mm-hmm. That's not the realistic thing. And, so I went through college with this. I got certified in Final Cut by, like, I think, sophomore year I was certified. And by the end of college, I was certified to train Final Cut. So, like, I got very invested in that process with the Apple products. And at that point I graduated college and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to get married. So I probably shouldn't direct because like, I'll be damned if I drag her through the hell that is trying to be a director. And so I moved out here to edit. And then very quickly I was like, oh, I only like editing my stuff. My stuff's the more fun stuff to edit. That stuff's kind of not as fun. And so I am like hopped back into directing. Yeah. And, but ever since that point, I have made it all very interchangeable. A lot of times, the way I sell myself as like the director to do this thing is that I'm a full package. I go, I'll shoot it, I'll direct it, and then I will edit the full thing.
Sure.
And I always come in before deadline, so they're happy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's always has been the backbone is I can sell myself as an editor, and I dare you to find someone faster. It's like my lot. You know, it's all pompous bullshit, but it's the mm-hmm. thing of like that's how I sell it. Is that sure. like get me in here? I'll do it. You know.
There is a lot to sort of selling yourself as any type of freelancer that is that like
yeah.
ability to sort of like be like, yeah, I can do this thing. I felt similarly, I think, in that like directing for me right out of the gate was something I felt like, well, I can't ask people to pay me to do that. But editing felt like something you could ask them to pay you to do.
Totally.
Because it felt like the sort of thing that's like you're paying me because you don't want to do it. It's not that you can't do it. In fact, some of the best people who I've worked for have been people who can do it
mm-hmm.
and are willing to do it if it comes down to it, but who say to themselves, I'd rather spend my time looking for the next thing or focusing on developing my directing skill, my producing skill, and I'm willing to pay you to do this part of the job. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe that's different because Alex, with Buttermilk, you're kind of going at it the opposite route, right? You're looking at that as like, I mean, somebody is saying that we don't want to edit ourselves, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, I feel like it's a cliche at this point, but it's also true because of the way editing works that almost everyone can edit in some way now.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't even seem functional to not be able to edit to some extent. So at this point, people are really hiring me as an editor because of what they can't do.
Yeah.
Really. Because it's like people will sit down and try to figure out a rough cut, but specifically what I'm doing most of the time, which is short form
mm-hmm.
or promos or trailers, it just takes the reps to sort of instantly be able to know how to fix something.
That style of a project.
Yeah. It's really has nothing. Like, I mean, it really has to do with being able to know what key you yep. have to turn. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Let's get there.
Yeah.
Let me go back to this question. When you guys first started out, what was the tool? I know for me, like I trained in Avid in school, so I knew how to use an Avid. And then it was all Final Cut. Forever, it was all Final Cut. Every gig I ever had was Final Cut until I worked for like a reality show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I was
for you guys.
I was certified Final Cut, and so I advertised myself always Final Cut. I very, very rarely have ever touched Avid. Don't know what I'm doing in it. It's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I all Final Cut, and then about 4 years ago, I switched to Premiere. I think a little earlier than a lot of other people.
Yeah.
I worked a permalance gig for like a teen girl like website, and all they were, their entire post house was all Premiere. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to learn it. And then I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I was like, all right. I mean, I still use my Final Cut shortcuts because like I memorized a stack of 300 flashcards.
I don't. I when I moved to Premiere from Final Cut, I was like, I'm just going to learn the Premiere and then I'll never have to think about Final Cut ever again.
No.
My
preferences are saved on my Adobe account.
Yeah.
And any machine I go onto, I quickly log in and load them. Because like I have even now, I've made like a bastardization of things where it's like, this is the shortcut I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've just made it this weird blend. But yeah, I've been Premiere for 4 years now. And I was also getting really, really into After Effects work. So just being able to blend the two was so nice.
That is really nice. I remember when the beta team I was on initially,
mm-hmm.
the Brig, like this was 2008. I remember Adam Sachs was on Premiere because he only had PCs.
Mm-hmm.
He was like a, you know,
weird
effects.
What
like
a weirdo. Effects
guy.
I remember being like, Premiere? The fuck are you talking
the
about?
The fuck?
Why would you use it?
Yeah.
And then it fucking won. You know what I mean?
I learned in 2004 when I was in college. I think I downloaded Sony Vegas.
Oh my god,
Sony Vegas!
Yeah.
I have a
who
friend.
Who used Sony Vegas?
No, joke. Sony Vegas was way ahead of its time the whole time. It was the only nonlinear editor that could do real time effects. You could drag effects onto it, and it would not need rendering. And that was in 2004.
I worked a news job that used Sony Vegas.
Yeah.
It was like that. Yeah. It was quick turnaround.
It was so quick.
Yeah. I really think that it's basically, from my experience, I know that there's a variety of like editing software that I've never encountered, like Grass Valley Edius. Like, is,
we all know about Grass Valley, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, I mean, I just know that there's like these like, I know that there's like Flame has, oh, like, God, whoever, but it's mostly Final Cut clones, and then there's Avid. That's like, and Vegas was just another Final Cut clone. So other than the fact that I went from Sony Vegas to Final Cut, and other than the fact that Final Cut looks like a Unix operating system, like, it was basically the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's nothing sexy about Final Cut look at all. Whereas I looked at Vegas and I was like, ooh, what are you? I'm sorry. I've gotten very nerdy now in this room.
No, I mean,
it's like, you guys getting aroused by nonlinear editors?
I come from a really different place of, like, I've never been a technically... I never considered myself, up until maybe the last couple of years, a technically minded person. I've always had a really hard time wrapping my head around new programs and, like, new devices. Like, as a kid, sure, the VCR was easy to use. But, like, as I started getting older, even my fucking iPhone 6, I was like, what is going on here? I really came into editing from a strictly creative place,
yeah,
of just hitting buttons until one of them worked.
Right.
And yeah, doing that enough to then remember which button I slammed my palm into. And to this day, it takes me, I think, a few extra steps than a lot of the other editors I know to do the research and look up a tutorial. It's not intuitive for me to do that. But what is intuitive is the rhythm and pacing of creative,
yeah,
editing.
Mm-hmm.
That always came very intuitively to me. I have a music background, a performance background. What did not come intuitively is all the hotkeys and all, yeah, and that was something I really had to learn through repetition over a number of years. But I mean, Final Cut and Premiere to me are so similar, really, now that I know Premiere well.
I mean, when did you start using Premiere regularly?
3 years ago.
Oh, so right around the time they were, yeah, finally making it similar.
Yeah. Right, right.
There was a good two versions prior where they're like, please come. And it was like, this thing is so hard.
Yeah.
And that was when, yeah, I started on it. And then, yeah, I finally was like, oh, thank you. You gave me all my things back,
yeah,
that I liked.
At this point, you guys are all working regularly in Premiere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the winner. Any Avid at all?
I have a lot of LA friends doing Avid, mm-hmm, for doing TV editing.
TV.
Sure.
But I think any digital house, and I think anything that's just about Rapid and they don't care about the infrastructure, yeah, it's Premiere.
Yeah.
Are you taking, and right now, I mean, Tessa, you're at a job, and mm-hmm, Chris, you're at a job, and Alex, you're sort of going house to house. Do you take Avid jobs, or is that not
an
option for you?
No, I don't. Because basically, based on the premise of like why we're having this discussion,
yeah,
I keep putting learning Avid off because I'm, that's an extra degree to go in the direction of using editing in a way that it's just not interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, it's very true. I mean, it's a fact that there are a lot of jobs that would maybe be interesting to me or be exciting in some way to be a part of them that only use Avid.
Mm-hmm.
But something in my mind is not fully committing to, it's like, learning every single facet of editing, you know, it's like fully committing to something that I'm just still trying to use as like a tool.
Well, right. You know? Yeah. Cause you don't want to specialize to the point where you become the guy they only know because of that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you don't want to be like, oh, I got to go to this guy because he's fantastic at the Avid. And like, I don't know anybody else like him.
I
want to be the guy that's like, oh, I know he can do this. Let's try him with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, to some extent, I don't fully understand its advantages. I mean, I've heard them described, but I forget them because I don't, you know, like, I don't work on Avid. But like, I mean, basically, I am trying to, I guess, I think of it almost like a mental reminder to myself that I'm not fully committed to this thing.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
that I can sort of pick up creatively and move to another position. Because to me, I think one of the things that sort of, you know, if we're talking about how to use editing to get somewhere else, I think one of the things that at some point I think I personally would have to admit is that at some point, if you want to really be a good editor, you have to fully just be an editor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really think that there are clearly editors out there who are amazing, and the reason that they're that good is because that's all they do.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about that, because I think that, like, just to sort of to take this to the next place, I think, and I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
For me getting into editing, what I quickly found, it was definitely like out of a place of like, now I need to make money. Quit my job. I need to make money. Where are they offering me money? And some friends of mine had a company and they needed edit work done. And they basically employed me for the next like 2 years, like on edit jobs. But I think that what was exciting about that for me from the beginning, and that was simultaneous to like when I started making videos here at UCB, and then we did like 50 videos in a period of like 18 months, which is insane.
Same, yeah.
You know? But to me, the thing that was always attractive about it was that using the skills that I had to tell stories, but thinking about it from the perspective of how can I write in the edit?
Yeah.
And I think I got lucky that the beta team at the time was so formative and everybody's skills were so rudimentary, fundamental, like not experienced in comedy, that as an editor, I was able to contribute to almost every single project in that way. They were right. Looking at you to be like, well, there's problems with this thing. Let's save it.
Oh, yeah.
And it happened in the edit. That's and then also, like, my friends at that job were like, we don't want to do this. Just make something great that our client will not complain about. And I just wrote entire videos in the edit room. They would just dump footage on me, and I'd be like, okay, let's make something. And, like, I understood their priorities, and I was like, I'm going to use this to my advantage. So from a very early time, it was like, yeah. Let's write from this space.
That's
what was
how... I mean, that's how I got an internship here.
Yeah.
I emailed UCB Comedy in like the spring of 2013, and I didn't know they did internships. I had no idea. I just knew I loved UCB, and I wanted to be involved in the filmmaking aspect here.
Yeah.
I emailed Julie Gomez, and she was like, oh, we don't have any internships open, but one of our performers just filmed a pilot, and we need an editor. Do you want to take a stab at it? And I was like, sure, why not? They handed me an unorganized drive with red footage they shot on a red camera with no sound recorded onto the red files. They did slate, however, so I was able to kind of like,
oh,
you know,
good.
I went through, I was able to, or like sinking by the wave of a hand, like finding the apex of when someone moved their hand. Like,
sure.
I was like, oh, I got, this is the first project. I don't know. Is this how they always work? I don't give a fuck. Okay. So they handed me this pile of shit. And the footage looked good. There was like really talented, funny performers for the theater. I was like, oh, I know these people. They don't know me. This is cool. I did my best. I handed the drive back to Julie and Todd, you know, and they were like, this is really fucking good. They were like, we were so worried about this project. We thought we had nothing. We were handing it to you being like, here you go, kid. You know, you're on your own. Bye. And because I got it and wanted to do a good job and I wasn't getting any notes, I didn't know anybody. I was like, well, like, I gotta try, right? Like, so, and that was kind of it. It was like, you know, you get sometimes as an editor, you get handed things and they're like, we don't know what to do with it. Yeah. Make it good. Mm-hmm. And you can't be like, no, because then you're not doing your job.
I just want to say that I actually find that impulse absolutely, like, I'll never understand that. Maybe it's because I've been editing as long as I've been a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like, but I'll never understand the leap of faith that someone takes when they just hand an editor their project and is like, I hope you can make this good. Like,
not at,
man.
Not at all. Because I would say the thing that I take away most in my directing from my editing is that I'm thinking about the edit on the set.
Yeah.
And you know, even today, I was directing today and, you know, performance was like really choppy and like I didn't have one take that was flawless from beginning to end. And in my mind, I was like, I'm still good because I know I got part of A, part of B. Like, I know where it can mix, so let's move on. You know, I was able to, like, keep us along and make you feel confident in that choice because I'm like, oh, I know how to save that right now. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine handing just, like, a pile of shit and going, oh, please make some salad.
I mean, I will say, though, just to, like, say that I'm not, like, I think that that's absolutely something that really good people, like, people who are good at delegating have to do. Like, you have to just hit. In order to do a project and to move on and to, like, be a normal person and not just work for, like, 24 hours a day constantly, you have to be able to put your trust in someone else. Yeah. And sometimes the only way for them to take that project to the place they want to take it is for them to start completely from, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes front-loading with a bunch of notes is, like, just like, well, if you have this many notes, you should just do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, sometimes...
That's what's really hard about being a director and an editor and not editing your own shit is being like, I directed this and this other person's, you know, going to edit it, which honestly for me happens kind of rarely. But in the times I've done it, I've had to try really hard not to micromanage because, like, as the director, being on set and directing and editing in your mind, you know what needs to hit and you know where those moments need to come. And then when you get that rough cut back from your editor and you're like, you know it's there in there, but there's no way for them to be in your brain. I find that to be really difficult.
I've had to deal with that now so much as the day job. Because for the first, I want to say 6 or 8 months of that job, I edited everything I shot. I was the one shooter, director, I was everything. And then I was able to bring on all of our mutual friends, Lee Chin. And he's now a full-time employee. He's my guy. He edits my things.
Great.
And holy shit, is it hard to not go, okay, here's exactly how you edit it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's that fun for, like, the thing we're talking about that's so much fun is how much we got to take control of the thing. It's what keeps you excited about the project. But at the same time, it's, I know the exact way it goes in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you do that, and then I'm sure we'll find it. And there is like a freedom to that finally of being like, okay, I want you here as the editor because you bring something different I don't bring.
Right.
And that's where it finally feels comfortable as a director to like hand off your edit, for me at least. Like when I know you're bringing something to it, I just didn't slap it upon you because I can't do it right now.
Maybe part of it too is type of work too. Because I definitely, like, the one company where I was working, a lot of it was in, like, unscripted stuff.
Okay.
It was in, like, documentary footage. And a lot of times stuff that they were taking on as a company that they didn't even shoot. It would be like, I remember I did a thing that was, like, Akon's EPK. You know what I mean?
Akon.
And it was like, there was some shooter embedded with him on some video shoots in Miami.
Right.
And the footage would come back to the record company, and the record company would pass it on to the production company, and we were supposed to find the story out of it, you know, that made everybody look good and sell the record for, you know, whatever type of press release they were trying to do for it. And so in that circumstance, I totally understood why these guys who owned the company were like, this is one thing we do, and we're also doing this and this and this. So, like, for this one, you go ahead and, like, run with it because that's why we hired you in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for me sitting in that chair, it was like, I don't want to sit in this chair forever. I knew then I don't want to sit in this chair forever. I want to do this to learn how do all these aspects work. How do I tell different types of stories from this seat? What is it like to be on the other side of it? You know what I mean?
Pick
their brain when I could to be like, what are you guys thinking about in terms of like putting this whole thing together? And then find ways to, you know, take on better, bigger projects through those relationships.
That's so funny because I remember when I didn't have as an extensive of a reel, I had a ton of music videos on my reel.
Yeah.
And I was applying for jobs and reaching out for narrative and short, you know, documentary stuff. And people would say, cool, do you have any examples of, you know, narrative or unscripted things? And I'd say, no, but I can do it. I know I can do it. And they'd be like, sorry, you know, we need to see it. And it's like, I get it now. But it's tough when you haven't done that stuff. You really just have to have that in your portfolio. But to know that you have the skills, you just haven't done it yet, is like a weird place to be. Because I did nothing but music videos for like 3 years. And then my own web series, right? But like you can only get so far on your own work. And that's the other thing is like when you apply to a job, you're like, well, I have these 3 web series I did in 2008, 2009, and 2010. And I wrote them, I started them, I edited them, I lit them. They were in my kitchen. My mom made cookies. Like, there's only, like, so much professionally that's going to be able to get you anywhere.
That's where like, as much as, like, it never made any sense to my father, I was like, yeah, I'll do the Craigslist job. Like, when I first got out here, I was like, yeah, I'll do the Craigslist job. Whatever. Because it gives you that diversity.
Yeah,
it's like, I assume we're all at the point where we're not Craigslisting anymore for our work.
No, it's been a while.
Yeah,
I will tell you, we should come back to this later because I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, yeah.
But the weirdest jobs we've done.
Well, I was going to get into this.
Okay, all right.
It was like in my time of just I am like, I need to make rent. What's the job I can find? I have edited some of the like just most mundane. But I have edited like makeup tutorials that were just a lady like talking to a camera off to the side.
Oh, yeah. I did a makeup tutorial. Great fun.
Oh, yeah. And like. I've edited that. I've edited, like, a guy that, like, just wanted to make, like, a love letter for his dog's birthday. It was just a video
that
he shot
of
his dog. Yeah, I mean, fine. It was $100. Whatever. You know?
Wow. That's cold, man.
Yeah. It was, like, $100.
That's a man who loves his dog.
Yeah, he's willing to spend a quick 3 digits.
Man.
What's the weirdest?
Yeah, what is, like, your, like, bizarre Why the fuck did I ever edit that?
Can I tell you? I can't actually tell you. I signed an NDA.
You said it. Wow. Wait, so yours was official enough to sign an NDA? Or was it like the crazy person who makes movies out of his apartment that made you sign an NDA?
You know what? It's the I'll tell you about it afterwards, but I signed
just give
NDA.
Us like a little hinty. Hinty.
Yeah, a little hint.
We talking movie? We talking television?
Was it for a major corporation? A major name brand?
It was for a very a couple of very prominent people. I can't.
Oh my God. All right, no juicy fun. Morsel, juicy morsel. But what's like your weird, I mean, you already make a lot of very peculiar humor content as well, but like, yeah, so what's weird for you?
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, Chris, us people who make sketches who are weird aren't like living in, you know, my life isn't full of editing jokes.
Sorry.
And weird sound effect. No, I don't.
I didn't mean never done.
I don't have a just reverse symbol following me around.
Yeah, my life doesn't cut to stock footage with a logo on it that's not replaced in the final cut.
We're trying very hard.
I don't know. When I moved to New York, like I went to school for 2 years in Pennsylvania and finished my bachelor's degree. Like I transferred after 2 years. And when I got here, I moved from Pennsylvania to New York. So I was like, very consciously as a filmmaker, I was moving to New York City. So I was like, well, I want to start doing things, but I was also like 20. So I didn't know what that meant. So I was like, well, I'm going to look on Craigslist and I'm going to find filmmakers to work with. And I ended up working with this guy who was, probably like in his early 40s or something. And he was putting together a presentation to pitch to New Line Cinemas, completely just freeballing it. You know what I mean? Like he maybe had like a guy who used to be his roommate a few years ago who worked at New Line, and he had this idea for a script. He had an idea for a trilogy.
Oh, good.
The new Matrix. He's like, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, my God.
The Matrix. What's the next trilogy? And he's like, and then it was his movie. And it was a... It probably, honestly, it really left a mark on me because now whenever I work on my own projects, that my first professional project was like an exercise in pathos and wishful thinking.
Oh my God.
And as a creative person, I mean, how many times are you working on your project like late at night and you just have this existential moment of like, what's this all about? What's this really all about? Yeah. Like, what do I like? Okay, I'm gonna show this. A bunch of people are gonna say they like it. Is that true? Like, what the fuck am I doing? And you think of like, you know, I mean, honestly, I will just say my lesson from this, although I didn't realize that at the time, is why are you really doing this?
Yeah.
There are so many people, so many people making videos and stuff like that. And it's not the way it was when you were growing up. Like, it is, the market is flooded in so many ways. So you really have to ask yourself why you're doing this. Yeah. Or otherwise, you're going to be a 40-year-old man pitching the next trilogy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He was following his dreams, Alex.
Hey, man, honestly, if he would have been more organized, I wouldn't have thought it was this sad.
His dream probably would have still been sad.
Yeah.
Can I get to you guys this? I've never booked a job that didn't involve a previous relationship.
Oh,
really?
Oh my God. Never. I've got some stories for y'all.
But I'm just saying, like, for me, whenever I would send out for things, it never came back.
Yeah, most Mandy. Whoever got a job through Mandy?
I got a lot of work through Mandy for a bit. That's actually how I got a lot of my ongoing things. So my first, I moved out here working for a network called Current TV, but it wasn't related to editing. It was just some stuff. The now defunct Current TV, may it rest in peace.
Al Gore.
Sure. It was bad.
An Inconvenient Truth? You worked on An Inconvenient Truth?
Let's say I did. That
really
sounds great.
Cool.
But my first like actual job beyond that, because it was a part-time thing, was I found a Mandy job for like a dubber at a production company, a commercial production company. And all I did all day was burn director reels. Like I would reorganize them and like they like needed the guy just to do that.
Sure.
I found that through Mandy. That lasted me like 8 months.
Guys,
I found another.
My jobs are so much weirder than y'all's. I'm going to kind of tell you a little. Just...
Yeah, please tell All me. Right. I love it.
You know Skinny Cow ice cream?
Yes, I do.
Of course.
Love their product.
So I'll set the picture. It's 2010. Tessa Greenberg is on Craigslist. And there's an ad that's like, it's perfect for me. It says, female videographer editor. Familiar with the Panasonic HVX camera. Boom. That's the only camera I know how to use in 2010. Perfect. I respond. I show them a couple examples of my work. Great. Can you come in today? Yes. I go in. They have a production studio in Manhattan. Everything looks legit. And they're like, so the job is you're going to Rhode Island and you're going to Houston, Texas. You're going to the convention center in the center of the city.
What?
Skinny Cow Ice Cream is having a promotional event to promote their new products. And it's a free event to the public where women are going to come eat Skinny Cow ice cream, raise awareness for breast cancer. They're going to be able to try on bra fittings, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm desperate to pay rent, so sure, sign me up. And you have to edit this. So I say yes. I sign a weird contract. And they're like, you're going to meet this guy, Bill, on 35th Street at 9 a.m. You're going to drive to Rhode Island. You're going to be there for one night. You're going to do the event and come back. And then you're going to edit it. And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. I need to pay my rent. So I show up to 35th Street at 9 a.m. And this, like, Honda Civic rolls up. And this, like, schlubby 30-something guy's like, hey, sorry, I'm late. And I get in the car and there's a guy passed out in the back of the car. And it smells like barf in the car.
Oh, good.
And I'm like... And I'm keeping it cool because I'm a chill person. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. And then we start driving uptown. And I'm like, so did you go out last night? And he's like, yeah, cool. That's great. And then we stop at 96th Street. And his friend gets out of the car and goes, thanks, man. And then we finally get on I-95. And I'm like, so what's going on, dude? Like, who are you? Who is that dude? And then he ends up being not such a bad guy. And he's like, yeah, we went out and partied last night too hard. I work for this company. I do these things all the time. He ends up being a good guy. We go to fucking Rhode Island. We film these women freaking out, eating ice cream on camera. And then that's the end of it. But, like, when I think about the way that job started, I was like, I'm getting in a car with a stranger, and there's a guy passed out in the back seat, smells like barf. And it ended up being legit, and I got paid and everything. But, like, that's what I was willing to do because I had the skills and fucking...
Can I just say that I forgot to mention that this man who I worked with, who is twice my age, regularly came to my house.
To like look at an edit.
Who to just sit and work over my shoulder. And at the time I was living in Greenpoint in a room that that was about the size of the room we're in now, which is
pretty small.
6 feet by seven.
Five, right?
Yeah, five feet.
It was a good demonstration of a first apartment for like a 20-year-old person, you know, it was really small and really, but I loved it. But there is that man
so
was in
weird.
It.
I just want to be self-indulgent for like 60 more seconds and just tell you this one other little story,
yes.
And it's called the Philippine Fiesta story.
Wait, you have a title for this story?
Yeah. Well, it's not even probably not that good of a story. I just like hearing myself talk. But this was the job. I show up on 35th Street for an interview. The guy's late. He's like, "I'm sorry, somebody passed out in the park, and I had to take care of them." And I was like, "Okay." He's like, "We're going up to the meeting now." And on the way up in the elevator, he looks at me and he goes, "When we go in this room, don't say anything." And I was like, "What, dude?" And he's like, "We're going to have a meeting. Just don't say anything." And I stopped him. I was like, "I'm not going in this room until you tell me. Like, I came here for a job interview for a video editing job. Is that what we're here for?" He's like, yes. "It's just, I need to speak with the client first, and so don't say anything." So I get in there, and the reason I felt at ease is like this, like, nice, like, old Filipino woman came to the door and was very warm. I was like, okay, that put me at ease a little bit. And then we go through a back room, and now we're in, like, a boardroom in the back of her apartment. And he continues to give a pitch about how he's going to make this big video for the Philippine Fiesta in New Jersey 2008, and that I'm the video expert that's going to make it all possible. And in the middle of the meeting, after, like, 30 minutes of me going, just sitting there, I was like, I gotta go. And I left. And then he texted me that night at 2 in the morning saying, "So you want the job?" And I was like, no.
No, I do not want that job.
Oh, my God.
The scariest time, that thing of, like, inviting this, like, personal safety. I took, like, a Craigslist gig that was, like, I got a great series. We're making a pilot. It's no pay, but there's great people involved. And like, maybe 4 months in. And
yeah,
I'm like,
that's code.
I got to do the thing. So I go, and it is deep in Flatbush, which, if you're not New York related, that's probably, like one of the few neighborhoods left that, like, didn't get safed up yet. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm walking through this neighborhood, like, kind of scared shitless, and this guy opens the door. He's like, you Chris? I'm like, yeah, man. And he's like, come on in. And he's got a fucking, he's got the whole cast there.
Oh, my God.
Doing a script reading, and he thought I needed to be there.
Oh.
And they proceed to read a 22-minute pilot all out loud. That is the most exhausting thing to look interested while listening to. It was miserable. And then the guy, literally, like, the guy who's running the show, he's, like, really charismatic guy, just, like, is looking at me. He just, like, punched me. He, like, hits me on the chest. He's like, and this guy's going to be the one that makes it look flawless.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I think I'm going to go. Like, I was like, nah, I didn't do it. I didn't talk. I didn't answer emails back from him. I still have the folder he gave me that had his production company's name on it.
Just in case. You know, you never know.
I always want to keep my contacts, like, close.
Yeah.
But not too close.
Well, we're talking a lot about, like, the horror story aspect of this thing. But I think what's also interesting is sort of, like, the thought process towards, like, flipping editing experience into other opportunities. And so, like, here's what I'm curious about. Is that, like, and again, I'll speak for myself. For me, it was always relationships. It was always, who do I know? Who have I done something for that's going to recommend me to the next thing? Never had any luck with the cold call. Never had any luck with the sending out my reel.
Yeah.
Never. It always was, I know you through this person. Let's work together on the next thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, and a lot of the bigger opportunities that I've had have been through, like, long-term relationships that were built up and then flipped into bigger projects. You know, the first feature I worked on was because that same company that gave me that long leash on the doc stuff sold or got investors for an independent feature. And we're like, come in because we can afford you.
Yeah.
And work on this feature and bust your ass for 7 months on this feature. And it was, like, a great opportunity, but it was only because I'd had 2 years of working with these people and developing those relationships to spin into that next thing. And then that flipped into another feature. And then I spent, like, 3 years working on features and eventually co-producing features. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, that was the flip that happened. For you guys, that growth, there's a lot of things that are negative. Where'd the growth come from? Where did the opportunities that helped you flip come from?
So, you know, it's funny that you said in relationships, because I think everybody's, like, you know, so much of this world is networking and making sure that, like, people know who you are because they can, so they can trust you, you know? But I kind of went the opposite way, where a lot of times I was able to connect with my friends who were, like, in the same position I was in because they knew I was doing cool stuff. But I was constantly taking new gigs that were very unrelated to each other. Almost to the effect where I felt like I was hitting a lot of dead ends, you know? It's like, oh, I spent 2 years editing, like I said, this teen girl site or whatever. And it's like, who am I meeting here? Like, editing this relationship show, you know? But I would do those things that steadily paid the bills. And because a lot of times the jobs I was doing didn't have a huge ask of me, you know, it's like, just get this thing done. And I knew I could do it fast. I spent that other time also just using the facilities to make my stuff. And so what I took out of my editing and how I flipped it was by just making myself a workhorse to where when I shot my own personal stuff, I knew, well, if I can cut this guy's stuff for money, I can cut my stuff for, you know, for growth. And so I started building relationships not from the professional work I was doing, but because people who collaborated with me personally saw that I actually got it done.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of the, I think we've all had the friends project that we've worked on and then nothing happens with it. And I always set out to be like, no, if you're giving me your time, I'm going to give you a product.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I got the job I have today because of that networking versus professional networking that I flipped into the next thing, into the next thing.
That's interesting. You and I met on
Improv Everywhere.
On Improv Everywhere stuff, which, like, my in with those guys was because that same production company was who Charlie used to call to do his branded stuff.
Right.
So they would produce Charlie's branded stuff, and then they would call me to edit it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Charlie and I connected over UCB, and then he started calling me for the musical stuff that he was doing that was like outside of
right his own personal work. Yeah,
yeah, trying to grow that aspect of his brand. We met on that.
Right. Yeah, and I started camera operating for them just through one of their other camera operators, Keith Haskell.
Yeah,
and I met him just through a random Funny or Die message. Of like, hey, you make funny video. I make a funny video. You want to make a funny video? And then we like met up in Williamsburg and made videos.
That's funny.
And so that's how I met him. He got me on that. And yeah, we met that way. But yeah, so I had always had a lot of those like false starts where it's like, yeah, I did that thing and I've edited for Charlie a couple times, but it didn't become the next biggest relationship.
Yeah.
But everyone remembered me through that. And so then when I, you know, because like you, I came in through UCB in the back door as well. Like I did some sketch classes, but yeah. Nobody remembered me there. Like I entirely showed up as like, hey, I do these things. Do you want it? Mm-hmm. And they go, yeah, sure. And now I do it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting.
I'd say prior to working at UCB when I was freelancing, when I wasn't picking up freelance jobs, I was in the same trenches. I was making web series with and for my friends and building those relationships with people that I still work with today. But largely, and again, this is like me coming from a self-indulgent place of just not wanting to settle for working at jobs that I didn't want to do and working for less money, like $100 to fucking edit your friend's web series. Yeah. Come on. But like doing that, because I'd rather be doing that than those weird makeup jobs, you
right.
know, for slightly more money. So that by the time I came to UCB, and I really got here right time, right place, which is when the company was growing into a really functional production department, which it was not three, four years ago. And I got here at the right time and right place. And honestly, I mean, you know, we've all drank the UCB Kool-Aid a little bit, but like this place has been very pivotal for me in being able to direct and edit. And I do owe it to my time prior in those trenches of doing those web series and weird videos and music videos.
Yeah.
That's where I was like getting my field experience. But it's not until you can take that experience towards a product that somebody else is paying you for to say, oh, this is real. Like, even when you make your own shit and you make shit with your friends, it's real.
Yeah.
But there's this aspect to it that feels like, is anyone paying attention here?
Yeah, like, it feels like it's that masturbatory element of, like, this is just for me, right? Versus once you finally start, like, making a living out of it, and it's like, no, this is for you because I do this.
I mean, yeah. to decode it, there's a very straightforward thought process, which is that when something is on a budget and is branded, it's not just that you did something for someone famous. I love things that are famous. It's that there is a certain level of professionalism that is expected.
Yeah.
And people need to know that they can trust that you, like, it is incredible to me that there are so many people working in this industry that are not good at keeping deadlines. I've never understood it. I mean, I guess it's because I was raised Catholic and because your boss is your God. But no matter how rebellious I am, when I am like, all right, I have to do this job, I become terrified of a deadline. And that is so much of where my work ethic comes from.
That's
is
funny.
Like, I have to do the job.
Yeah,
I have to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have something on your reel that's backed up by a brand, you know, people are like, well, you're working with a business that is working in the same world as us.
Yeah. And
branded.
But it's also, I think, the trick of it is kind of what we've touched on before, which is not to be pigeonholed if it's not what your ultimate desire is. I think that's a hard balance.
Yeah,
I remember when this was like now almost 3 years ago, you know, and probably the most like it was a union job.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like one of the more lucrative jobs I ever had.
Yeah.
Like cutting a reality show.
OK.
And I remember at the same time I had a project in the New York Television Festival. And so did Todd and Julie here at UCB. It was like three summers. And I remember like going to the New York Television Festival and like having to take an extra like half an hour lunch break in order to like go to some events at that festival and being like, God damn it. You guys are down here with these projects, doing comedy projects that you guys made in a way that was like, felt like, damn, you're doing that for your job. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now I got to go back and serve the master of, at this job, I'm just the editor, and they're already talking to me about, don't you want to do Real Housewives when this wraps? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Being like, fuck,
no,
I'm becoming that guy.
Right.
And that was a moment for me where I was like, I could just settle into this. I could. I could make good money. I could chill the fuck out. I could work 8 months out of the year. And you see these guys who do it. They work 8 months out of the year, and they live the good life the other four. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They maybe take that time and do a feature in the other four that maybe goes somewhere, maybe doesn't. It's very masturbatory.
Right.
But that's the lifestyle choice. And it was like at that moment for me, I was like, this is either the time to do it. My wife was pregnant too, so it was also like,
puppies.
But I was like, I'm either doing this now or I'm not, you know? And like I made the choice to not and like be like, I'm going to change this now.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it's a question out to you guys. Is there any moment like that for you? Any thought process like that? Like, or where are you at in that process for yourselves?
Well, recently I have I've always felt a little bit like I am living a double life, to be honest, to be an editor. Or at least one thing that I can do is weirdly overrepresented in my life. And even though I enjoy editing in a certain way, I do. I mean, I do enjoy it. No reservations. I enjoy editing.
Just a lot of repetition of the statement to make yourself feel better.
I swear.
But it sounds like I have reservations about the places where I work because nobody gets into this. I mean, almost no one I can think of starts out wanting to write or make movies or sketch shows and then ends up working in commercials or something, and it's like, great, same thing, perfect. This is exactly where I wanted it to end up. So, or like, ends up doing something corporate when you want to do something that's creative or challenging something corporate. And for me, I've been starting to finally express during my day job what my actual views are about my job. I mean, basically, like, straight up with people, like, look, I want to do a good job, but like, I'm not available next month because I'm working on my own stuff because I'm a writer and I make comedy. And I think it's just like you have to just express that. You can't hide that, you know, like, if you want to do something else, you just have to know that like you can't apologize for it. And the other thing is that unless you work with a monster, they're going to be like, cool.
Because they're entirely in the same position you are.
Yeah, they're like, cool. You're going to go, like, do something you really like? Like, that's great. I think that's the other thing is that, like, you, like, almost, I mean, to some extent, when I work at an editing job, it's almost like you have to be like, I'm an editor and I love editing. It's like, and I don't do anything else and I would always edit if you let
so
me.
That's so funny. I have always been, and maybe this is to my detriment at certain places, but I've always been unapologetically open about being an editor, a filmmaker, a director, and a performer. And then I said, there could have been situations in my life and job opportunities where they heard that and they did not like hearing that. And they were like, oh, she's in it for herself or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I could understand that. But because of the way I am and my personality, I'm just very unapologetically open about those things. And in certain instances, I think it has allowed me to come into a place where they're like, oh, what else are you working on? You know, and it's worked in my favor. What else you do? Oh, you do music? That's great. Like, let's integrate that into what we do or whatever. And in that way, it's been everything for me to be able to be like, I don't have to just be an editor. Like, I love, like you, I really do enjoy editing. There's things about it that I love. But like, I'm in a moment right now in my life where I'm looking towards wanting to just direct more, you know, and make my own content. Like, the pinnacle of what I could see and is a life in comedy and filmmaking. And this is, again, this is like the utmost like dream. It's like, look at fucking Louis C.K. He is a writer, he's a comedian, and he's a fucking kick-ass filmmaker. Now, is that ever going to happen to me? Probably not. But like, imagine if you could do that in your own way.
And he edits that show.
Exactly, oh, yeah, exactly.
He edits the show. I mean, totally. the thing is now.
That's what I'm saying.
I just want to say, though, this to me gets back to that, not to like be preachy about this, but like, you can do that.
Yeah.
I mean, and you do. And like, we can all do that. But like, the reality is like, why are you doing it? Do you only want to, like, I think that's the thing. That's the problem, is like, where does the growth come from? Well, the growth comes from doing the things that you want to do now, not knowing where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And I think like that's why, I think that's where the most, the greatest impulse to pigeonhole yourself would come from, which is like editing is sort of like being a drummer or something. If you're a good editor, like there's a lot of editors, but people have a hard time finding reliable editors.
Yeah.
And they find a hard time working with an editor that they can trust and not have to explain what every single thing that they want is. Yeah. And once you get that sense that someone trusts you and that you have something like a secure job, that's an impetus for you to pigeonhole yourself. You're like, well, I could take a risk and possibly not know where that filmmaking, writing, editing dream goes, or I can just be an editor, which is kind of like 25% there or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think my background's always been much more similar to Tessa's in that, like, I've been very transparent and honest about my opinions of things and I'm in the place. I mean, even now with my day job, I think it's probably the job I've become most attached to that I've ever had. And I feel like I have a huge sense of ownership in the work that I'm making. But I've plainly told my boss, I'm like, you get the best me when I'm 1 foot out the door here. So I'm going to go make a short for 2 weeks and I'm going to come back and we'll do more stuff. And he's like, cool. You know, and I think it's about being honest with other, you know, being transparent and honest that, like, you got me for this thing, but I do a lot more than that. And also being honest with yourself, because the hardest part, especially if you're going to do editing as the way to get in the door, is that you're sacrificing a lot of hours of yourself to get in the door.
In a chair, staring at a screen.
Yeah. Staring at a screen with shit you don't necessarily, like, aren't passionately about crafting into the thing. But you have to be able to, like, through all that darkness, like, remember why you're there and remember that, like, you deserve to make the thing for yourself now.
Well, I mean, I just want to say, I think that's another place where the impetus, specifically with editing, it is such an energy draining job. Like, it really is. Yeah. Like, difficult projects are really, I mean,
it's all.
Yeah, I edited a pilot I think it ended up being 12 minutes or something, and out of like maybe 3 hours of footage, and I wanted to make as good as I could, and I think I basically was working a day job, then coming home, then working until morning, not sleeping. Obviously, that's even worse, much worse.
That's awful.
But I mean, but to give it your all, if you work 4 days in a row giving it your all, you might feel weird for like 2 weeks afterward. Yeah. You know, you might be like, all right, I gave A triple plus work for 3 days. Now I have to give B work for two. And that goes with all your own stuff too.
Can I say this? I think that I totally agree. And maybe some of this also comes down to format, because like a lot of this, like the three features that I've edited are documentaries. Mm-hmm. And they're documentaries that have a comedic element to them. Two of them. The other one was Occupy Wall Street, so it didn't have a comedic element to it. But it was like, Those projects, I came out the backside of those three projects saying to myself, I can't take this on again. I'm like burnt out, feeling exactly the way that you're describing right there. Like, I can't do this. It's too much. But at the same time, when I look back at that experience, that storytelling, I also have zero regrets about any of those projects, because at the end of the day, I know, and it's from that documentary world where it's like you're creating something out of real life. You're creating something out of an experience that isn't scripted. It isn't planned. You know, it is planned, but it's like, you're creating that story, that big story, in a way that when you walk away from it at the end, you're like, I can do that.
Yeah.
And now any job that I take on or any job that comes down the pipeline, I can point to those three things and say, I'm credited as somebody who sat in that room and gave it that effort and found 90 minutes worth of, you know, I think they were close to 80, but 80 minutes worth of like three act structure story and comedy, like out of what was 300 hours of footage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so like there is that, like, I don't regret it at all.
Yeah.
But, like, it was incredibly depleting of every aspect of it.
But you know the thing I think that's so beneficial about making editing your way in, and I think it's regardless of whether you want to flip it into directing, you want to flip it into acting, writing, whatever, editing is the actual like bricklaying storytelling. You learn then and there how to actually put that story together and what are the ways to do it. And I think anybody who edits becomes a better blank. They become a better director. Mm-hmm. They become a better writer because they've sat in the chair, they've put in the hours, and now they know how they craft stories. And I found it, as I've looked back at like all of the content that I've made and the stuff that I've edited of my own, I've learned so much about how I tell a story, about what my voice even is, just because I've sat in the chair and cut and put two shots together to make a sequence, you know? So for me, that's the most important element of like my editing is like it's reflective of how do I tell stories? How am I going to continue to tell stories? And just learning from it.
Yeah. And maybe the last question here. And I think the last question would be for you guys now, how do you present yourself to the world? How do you describe yourself? You're going into a prospective job. Alex, you're actively taking it.
Yeah.
But it's through an agency.
Yeah.
So it is defined. You're not seeking those opportunities outside of that.
No. I mean, really, I guess just because of if I'm applying for a job in the same way that you wouldn't put on a resume for a job as a writer, you wouldn't put that you worked in retail for 3 years. I tell them my experience as an editor. And that's basically it. But like when it comes to working as an editor, and I get, like, you're right, I'm not applying for jobs, but I stick to the job, at least at first, mainly because that's a way that I protect myself. Most of these jobs I'm doing, I don't want them to have any say, any input on what it is I'm doing. And that's how I keep that mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to people who I would say that I want to work with or I'm interested in, you know, sort of presenting myself as a full person, I tell them that I'm a comedian and I'm a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not, but, you know.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as of, I want to say for the past, I used to say director, editor. I still say that my title is director, editor because I can't get him to drop the editor part. But, I mean, anymore, I am a director.
Yeah.
I'm a director and a producer even in certain ways. But, I mean, I only cut at work anymore maybe once a month.
Mm-hmm.
I still cut all my personal stuff, you know, short films, stuff like that. But, yeah, I think I finally have got it to the point now where I let it earn all of its merit, and now I get to do the thing I'm wanting to do. I'm directing now. So mm-hmm. It's that's a weird change of pace.
Yeah. It's funny because in my time here at UCB Comedy, I've gone from being just an editor to now the head of post-production. I'm really proud of that title. But when I go out into the world, say at South by Southwest last month, when mm-hmm. I met new people, I presented myself. I said, hey, I'm a director. I'm a filmmaker and I'm a director. And then when we got into the conversation, I would say, well, my job is that I'm the head of post at UCB Comedy.
Yeah.
And I'd give them my UCB Comedy card. But I would say I'm a director first because that's what I want to continue on to be. Mm-hmm. I don't want to continue on the rest of my life as an editor. I want editing to be a tool that I have in my pocket. And when I want to edit projects, I want to be able to edit projects. But because I see myself as a filmmaker and a director first, I try and present myself that way. And if an edit, like somebody emailed me a couple weeks ago asking if I wanted to edit something, like an editing job.
Yeah.
But they had seen my director's reel, which I also cut. And they emailed me based off of that. And I was like, well, yeah, I did cut my director's reel. But I thought that was interesting because I don't know if they knew that I cut my director's reel, but they were contacting me for an editor job. So that was like an interesting, you know, kind of turn of events. But yeah, no, I mean, I believe that it helps to put forward in the world what it is that your intention is. And it's not lying either. You know, by me saying I'm a director, I do direct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's not a lie at all to say the title that even though that's not the thing you're paid to do, that's the thing you are.
Yeah, and then it goes, it's like, and then if you actually get into a conversation with that person, that's when, like what Alex is saying, that's when the organic opportunity comes up to be like, well, I also do comedy and I write and like I do music and I'm a performer, but like, I'm not going to lead with all that. That's crazy. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Definitely complicated.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, being, I would say one of the main things that I probably took a long time to settle on comedian and filmmaker is because, like, I think the concept of being a comedian is sort of that you don't put forward any, like, to me, if you're a comedian, you don't put forward anything pretentious. The word filmmaker, like, sucks. Mm-hmm. It's not a good word. It's like, it references, like, a medium. It, you know,
it's like, what does it mean?
Yeah,
it, mean?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
It has like overtones of like auteur.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the title I get tossed around now when I'm introduced to like clients at work is, oh, this is Chris. He's our creative.
That also sucks.
You know what the worst term ever is? Fucking predator, producer, editor.
Oh, yeah. A predator makes you sound like you're stalking people. It's
also like, oh,
atrocious.
Here's the person that we pay less money
to do
more.
Two people's jobs.
Yeah, for sure.
Predator.
Well, guys, thanks so much for doing this.
Well,
I think this is a really valuable conversation. So.
Sorry, cool. I feel like I burped a few times in the room and it smelled, and we're in a small room, and I know you guys can't smell.
I mean,
that.
I tried to do the burps.
I'm trying.
You know, I'm going to go.
You're boxed in.
I don't think I used my nose once while I was in here.
God, thank you so much.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you so much.
Your nose
is far worse than your mouth breathing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for doing it. And see you soon.
Peace out.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And that will do it for episode number 27 of this podcast. Hopefully you benefited from that conversation. It's quite an in-depth discussion we had, and hopefully something that if you are an editor or someone who's looking to get into that field, this was of value to your process. As always, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes.com/UCB Comedy. That's our home base for feedback with y'all. And we always love to, hear from you guys on how we're doing. In fact, this week on Facebook, we got a nice message from a creative in Madison, Wisconsin, who said that he finds this to be a practical information podcast that goes beyond writing. Well, sir, thank you for that. That is a compliment in my view. And also, if you wanted to go beyond writing, well, today was the episode for you. So hope you enjoyed this one as well. And thanks for reaching out. As always, connect with us in those ways, and we're happy to connect with you. I'll also let you guys know on there what I thought of Sick House and the $6 price tag that went with it. As always, you can connect with UCB Comedy on social media at UCB Comedy. We've got new videos that are coming out, if not all the time, on a regular basis now. YouTube and Vimeo/UCB Comedy. Don't forget, you can check out the live version of this podcast at the Del Close Marathon. We're going to be up Sunday, the 26th at 2 p.m. at our UCB Comedy Podcast Lounge. Check that out. And as always, guys, until we see you next time, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.